Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we'll look at national parks and privatization. We'll specifically be looking at the Point Reyes National Seashore and conflicts that have been ongoing over the years. We're joined by the former executive director of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association, Mark Bartolini, author of an article, Privilege, Parks and the Root of Disparity. And later in the program, we'll be joined by Laura Cunningham. She's the California director for the Western Watersheds Project. We'll be talking about the environment and the economy and the role of national parks in our society. Stay with us.
Unthinkable crimes perpetrated by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise, another guy's democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we're going to be looking at national parks, more specifically in Northern California. We're going to be looking at Point Reyes Seashore. Our two guests today are experts in environmental issues and in issues around parks and preservation. Our first guest is Mark Bartolini. He's the author of a forthcoming article called Privilege, Parks, and the Root of Disparity. As a disaster response humanitarian assistance professional, Mark Bartolini has a combination of practical field experience in the world's most complex crises coupled with management and oversight at the most senior levels of the profession. Mark received a White House appointment to direct the Office of U.S. Foreign Disaster Assistance in USAID in President Obama's first term. He also received an appointment to the President's Advisory Committee on Voluntary Foreign Aid. Mark's resume is very long. He's focused much of the last several years exploring ways to strengthen humanitarian communities' response to challenges posed by climate change. For 2 years in 2009 and 10, Mark was the executive director of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association, and during that time, they increased scholarships for children from underserved communities by 60%. Mark Bartolini, welcome to the Project Censored Show.
Thanks, Mickey. Thanks for having me.
I have special thanks, of course, to Diane Gentile and John Crowley here in the Petaluma Aquas community for connecting us in this very important issue on privileged parks and the root of disparity. And you're going to talk to us and our listeners about the interesting amalgam of many of the things that are happening both in the international and national community on the macro level that kind of melt all the way down into the micro level regarding Point Reyes Park and many other related issues, even surrounding social justice and equity. So Mark Bartolini, give us a little bit of a background on how you came to be working with the Point Reyes Seashore and, of course, what your current concerns are.
Well, I've lived out in Marin all my life. I'm a native, and I've lived out in the Inverness area right on the borders of the park for about 35 years. And I took a position for 2 years as the executive director of the Seashore Association, the park's nonprofit. And it was really an eye-opener for me. I learned a lot about the history of the park. And what really struck with me is when the park was first created, there was an understanding on the part of many of its early framers that the Park Service had a problem in terms of visitation to the national parks. It is overwhelmingly white. People of color, for a variety of reasons which we can get into, simply haven't visited in the numbers that white people have. And this is a problem for a number of reasons, especially it's being especially exposed now with what we're seeing with COVID. But we can get into that more in the interview. But I wanted to say that when the framers put together the park, they did some really unusual things. One was that they made the park free in perpetuity. And the reason they did that is the proximity of the Point Reyes National Seashore to a major urban area. Back then, it was about 4.5 million people. Now there's about 8 million people in the Bay Area, many of them living in underserved communities. And here was a chance for people to get to a park that's only about an hour away from San Francisco, no more than 2 hours from most other places in the Bay Area. There's even public transportation that comes out here. And the fact is that underserved communities haven't been able to access parks in part because of the cost. It's expensive if you have a family to take them to Yosemite or Yellowstone, the cost of travel there, lodging, meals, and the entrance fees. So you also have issues around communities of color and underserved communities being besieged by industrial pollutants, other factors of living in poverty-stricken areas of the Bay Area. And the founders of the park thought this was a way that they could introduce them to a true park experience, an environment that they could afford and easily access. But over the years, ranchers who had sold their properties to the taxpayers decided that they didn't want to abide by the original terms, which were essentially a lifetime lease for the lifetimes of the original owners of the ranches. And they've lobbied very hard and very successfully. They've used groups, some of them Koch Brothers funded. There was a meeting with President Trump recently by one of the ranchers. And they've been able to gain a lot of traction in Congress. And they're now potentially going to be receiving really extended leases and also extending their activities in the park beyond simply cattle and dairy ranching.
That's a very complicated story. And like you said, goes back quite a ways. Later on in the program, we'll be joined by Laura Cunningham, Western Watersheds California director, and we'll be getting into some of their wildlife news and some of their recent legal victories and so on. So that's certainly going to be something that'll come up again later in the program. But for right now, Mark Bartolini, let's look at that history. The article that you've put together on privileged parks and the root of disparity, let's talk about the roots of that disparity. I mean, you talk about here about your love of nature and how it's where everything connects, not just for you, but for all of us as humans on the planet. Your concern about climate change and so forth, obviously fueling even more of your concern and interest about accessibility to these seemingly shrinking areas. Not a new issue, right? We go back over 100 years when President Teddy Roosevelt began the conservation, a national effort for conservation. He certainly didn't start any of those movements. But federally, he began to acknowledge the significance of saving space after the alleged closing of the Western frontier in the late 19th century. These have been battlegrounds ever since, these kinds of areas and people trying to get access to them and private interests trying to use them. You write, quote, "The subtle and not so subtle cumulative impacts of generations of prejudice, privilege, and racial and economic injustice that negatively affects the health and well-being of people of color, especially in underserved communities." And you go on to talk about a history of what was going on, including Jim Crow segregation.
Dating back to the creation of our earliest parks around the turn of the century, you had a number of parks in the South that were segregated, and the Park Service abided it. They did nothing to stop segregation and actually created separate, quote, but equal areas in our national parks, and you can still look back in the histories and see signs of these areas. And you combine that with other factors. You know, you have law enforcement and visitation that's predominantly white and law enforcement that's heavily armed. These have not been welcoming things for many African Americans who have a very troubled history in rural areas with armed law enforcement. So there's more subtle things that I think have impacted visitation. And then on Native Americans, you had centuries of genocide being committed against Native Americans in the United States. And then when the parks were created, many of them were kicked off their ancestral lands. So while I'm a huge supporter of our parks, you can't deny that in their founding, there were a lot of problems. And the way they were managed and also some of the things that had to take place in order for these properties to be turned over to the public. So these are factors, I think, that are in people's minds culturally that have hurt visitation. And obviously there's the cost element, too, that they're expensive to get to. And you combine all these, and what we're seeing now with COVID is that the populations that are being most devastated as a proportion of their demographic numbers in the country are African Americans, Latinx, and Native Americans. And when you look at parks over the last 20 or 30 years, there's been tremendous research on the health benefits, not just the physical health benefits that look at obesity, cardiac disease, high blood pressure, those types of things, but the mental health benefits as well for people who visit our parks. And you can make that correlation between these low visitation numbers and the fact that those communities are not enjoying to the degree that other communities are the benefits of our parks. Now, it's a complex issue. I'm not suggesting that it's all rests on our visitation to the parks, but certainly cumulatively, when you look at elements of our society and how these marginalized communities have suffered from lack of access, this is just yet another example, and it has significant implications. So we're talking about now basically turning over a third of this park to the ranching community for the foreseeable future. They're talking about instead of 5-year leases, 20-year leases, and those leases may be extended almost automatically. So we're looking at maybe 40-year or longer leases. And they're looking at expanding from just doing ranching to doing row crops and farming other types of animals. It's really not a national park anymore. The area is surrounded by ranching. And Sonoma and Marin County has you know, innumerable ranches. And this is the crown jewel. It's the only national seashore on the Pacific coast. And you look at the public response to this, and the management process that's been undergoing to date, there was a public scoping process, and 94% of the respondents did not want ranching in the park. Only 2.6% supported ranching. And that mirrors national polling, showing that Americans want their national parks to be managed in a way that, number one, protects the environmental resources of the park. So, you know, this is a very good case of how effective political action, which you have to hand to the ranchers, they've been very effective, has really turned the tide against a common good, which is a national park that can help the entire community in terms of both their mental health and their physical well-being.
So, Mark Bartolini, can you talk a little bit more about this? You certainly gave us a disclaimer or two in there in terms of how this isn't the only issue that contributes to quality of life issues for people in large metropolitan areas like San Francisco Bay Area. But the fact that you are documenting such a significant lack of access to outside spaces, open spaces. I mean, look, let's be frank about it. You know, the population in, say, Marin County, the Point Reyes Light, the newspaper there, a fantastic local paper, by the way, that has covered a lot of important issues in the North Bay, great reporting by Peter Byrne and others over the years. They've actually had a series, Reckoning with Racism, that they've been publishing in the last month. And in it, they noted that the median income in Marin County is $124,000. The average home is over $1 million, and African Americans represent only 3% of the population. And it goes on to talk about the experiences of some people of color in Marin County. So let's go back to that point you met. Not only is it difficult for people in the Bay Area to get to these areas if they don't drive or don't have this kind of access, but how inviting is it overall when there's some of these contentions going on? And in the Point Reyes Light, it talks about how a lot of the people at the park don't really look like people in these underserved communities. And there's a reticence to get people to go. And it's something that's almost off the radar in some communities in the Bay Area, that this isn't even something that's available. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, again, I think it's become sort of a cultural problem that it's been built into cultures that national parks are not welcoming for certain groups. And I mentioned some of the reasons why. There are a number of initiatives out there, people who are trying to address this. And the Park Service is aware of it, certainly, as well. And to be fair, they're trying to address it also. But I don't think they've fully done the listening they need to do in these communities to understand what's truly going to make them more inviting. So that's the problem. And when you look at Marin County, it is, as you mentioned, it's a predominantly white and one of the wealthiest counties in the country. And the Board of Supervisors, our representative, a Democrat, Jerry Huffman, introduced legislation 2 years ago that would have codified this change toward ranching. And the Board of Supervisors called it a no-brainer. Well, I think it was a no-brainer in the sense that they didn't look at the research that's out there that shows the benefits that parks have. And the research that shows that people from underserved communities and people of color are not accessing that. It's really unfortunate, and I don't think there was anything deliberate on their part, but I don't think they thought through the policies that they're implementing. And it's something that, again, in cumulative impact for the quality of people's lives, I think you can absolutely add the ability to enjoy outdoor spaces as to one of the reasons why in this country whites tend to live much longer than people from underserved communities and people of color.
We're talking with Mark Bartolini right now on the Project Censored Show, Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We're talking about some of the conflicts that have been happening in the San Francisco Bay Area, Marin County, around Point Reyes National Seashore. But we're talking about a lot of other related issues. And after this brief musical break, I'm going to continue our conversation with Mark Bartolini. He founded the Climate and Humanitarian Crisis Initiative. And also in the last decade, he was executive director of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association. And he dealt with many of the issues that we're talking about today. So stay tuned. After the brief break, we'll continue our conversation with Mark Bartolini.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, and I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are looking at Privilege Parks and the Roots of Disparity. That's a piece forthcoming by our guest right now, who is Mark Bartolini. He has a long history working in disaster relief around the world, was appointed by former President Obama to various committees to work on disaster assistance around the world. And of course, closely related to today's subject, Mark Bartolini, he founded the Climate Humanitarian Crisis Initiative and also was executive director of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association. And one of the things that Mark worked on was increasing scholarships for children from underserved communities to access these national parks. And so today on the show, we're looking at this nexus between social justice, equity, land use, national parks, and of course, the very holistic and healthy component that especially people in urban areas don't really have a lot of access to outside space or outside areas. And Mark Bartolini's talking with us about that right now. So Mark Bartolini, before the break, you gave us a little bit of a background, a history. You mentioned some of the significant conflicts in the area in Marin County, which is not a diverse county. But you also noted the conflict with ranchers and other commercial interests. And I wanted to get a little bit more into that to give listeners a better idea. Now, I think, of course, I know where you stand. What is the conflict and what is the problem with ranchers? And, of course, there was the issue of Hog Island, the oyster company, and there's been some pretty significant conflicts out here in what otherwise might look like a pretty sleepy part of the United States, but it's actually been very contentious around these issues.
There are definitely proponents out here of continuing ranching, and there's a number of reasons, but primarily it's related to food production. They feel they're playing an important role in the county's economy. And there is an alliance between many food growers and food producers out here. There's the farm-to-table movement, all which I'm very sympathetic toward. But again, there are ranches throughout the county, both Sonoma and Marin. There's not a shortage of ranchers. There's only one national park. If you take a trip to Yellowstone National Park and go to Lamar Valley, it's a spiritual experience for many people. You see vast herds of bison. You see what this country was like before industrialization. That is what the vision of Point Reyes was. You could go out to Point Reyes, would be the vision, and see herds of free-roaming tule elk, other wildlife, hike from Tomales Bay all the way over the Pacific. You come out now, and in that third of the park, you've got fencing, you've got denuded fields, you've got 5,000 or 6,000 cattle out there. It's an entirely different environment. And it's something that you can see, as I said, all the way out to the park. That's all you see is ranching. So to see it again when you get to the park, it's really about what should our national parks be. And the idea of continuing on ranching in perpetuity, which is where this is going, as I described earlier, I think has not only economic problems. The ranchers have made a case that they contribute about $16 million a year to the local economy. Well, that pales in comparison to the park, which is over $120 million for tourism and other things it brings to the community. Plus, I think even more important than those two figures are the unquantifiable health benefits. Now, I say unquantifiable, but there's actually research. There's a university in Australia that a year ago did research, a long research project on the benefits of national parks to people's health, Griffith University. And they calculated in the trillions of dollars globally that national parks contribute to the local economy and to the regional economy. And how does it do that? By mental health benefits, by giving people a space that they can go so they get all the benefits of being out in nature, which are, you know, well-researched. These aren't just things that people throw out there. You can look through considerable research. And that benefits corporations and others with well-rounded, well-adjusted people. So I think they're taking a very narrow vision of one economic factor, food production. And the food production, I'm not denigrating it in any way, but frankly, it's not something that most people from these very communities that are hoping to visit the parks can afford. You look at cheese, you look at dairy products coming from this region, they're very boutique type foods. They're out of the range of most people's pocketbooks. But it serves a certain interest, and they've lobbied hard, and they've been able to succeed in terms of getting our Senator Feinstein and our Congressman Jared Huffman, who've both been extremely supportive of the ranching versus the overwhelming public support for protecting the natural resources. So I think it's a debate over what our national park should be. And whatever happens here doubtless will have implications for other parks around the country that face similar issues.
Well, Mark Bartolini, once again, we're back to history. The late 19th century, Frederick Jackson Turner wrote on the importance or significance of the frontier in American history. And again, it's right around this time with Western expansion. You mentioned earlier the genocide of Native peoples, the displacement of local populations, indigenous populations. And of course, the park systems are, unfortunately, they are part of that history. But it was also a conservative or conservational movement as a backlash to wanton industrial expansion that was also on the move in the late 19th, early 20th century. So let's go back to that and up to the present. That's the root of many of those conflicts on the political economy of land use. So this isn't a new issue. It's an ongoing issue. I would like to hear you address, if you could, more about the historical roots of this challenge. And do you see anything in the past that could be a useful tool to reconciling these conflicts now?
Historically, the argument is made that the ranches are a critical part of the cultural history of the peninsula. And I think that's true. And I think that whatever happens in resolving this dispute, that historical legacy should be retained. And there are already a couple of ranches in the park that are not working ranches any longer, but their history has been retained. And that's what has happened in a number of other national parks around the country. And that's a far cry from a working ranch in a national park. And there are people that believe that that's appropriate use. But their majority of people, as I've said, based on polling, don't believe that. They want to go to places where they can feel what the country was like before we've gone through our major industrial changes. And that's what our national parks, I think, the wildlife-oriented national parks. Obviously, there are a number of monuments in the park system that are providing other aspects of history. But Point Reyes, I think, is, and certainly the initial framers of the documents that established the park believe that it was such a wildlife-rich area. It has the richest bird population of any national park in the country. It has unparalleled marine wildlife around the park. And it has the last remaining vestiges of native tule elk in the state. And they're not an endangered species, but they're a threatened species. And yet they're fenced in as if you're in a zoo, except for one small herd, which the ranchers are now trying to relocate back into the area or have killed. That, to me, is not the ethos of how we want to see our national parks managed. And I'm hoping that people listening to this will consider writing Senator Feinstein and writing Congressman Huffman and saying, no, this is not something we're going to stand for, because Congressman Huffman has said he's ready to reintroduce his legislation that would essentially codify this for generations to come.
So Mark Bartolini, you know, the show airs across the country, and if you're not in California listening to the Project Censored show, perhaps listeners maybe should start paying more attention, if they haven't already, to some of the national parks and places that are near where they live. Because, again, this is an issue that, again, it's made some of the local press, but it's not something that's screaming headline news. And a lot of these conflicts and things, as significant as they are, happen under the radar. Would you say that that's correct?
Well, Mickey, I think that's an excellent point. And I think, you know, the ranching issue is one that plays out in a number of parks throughout the country. And there's always tensions between, usually it's ranches that are outside the park, and how the park's wildlife impairs their ranching operations. So it's somewhat unique. There's only a handful or a few handfuls that have actual ranching operations inside the park. But I think what you've raised is the issue that we were talking about initially, which is that every park in this country has a problem with visitation by underserved communities and people of color. And I think that's something that collectively, with greater awareness of the cumulative impacts of issues in our society and how it impacts the health of these populations, we can do a better job at welcoming, changing the culture that invites people to go to these parks and receive the benefits that many of us ourselves do.
So, Mark Bartolini, in the last couple minutes we have left in this segment, in addition to what you were mentioning is the health and well-being benefits of national parks and the disparity or lack of equity in terms of access, let's shift gears briefly and talk about another major concern of yours, and that's responding to and dealing with climate crisis. And so how do places like Point Reyes act as buffers against extreme weather events, or, you know, help control climate issues? Can you talk a little bit about the significance of parks in that regard?
Well, again, there's undisputed research that shows that there are issues with cattle ranching and methane and greenhouse gases. So in Northern California, we all know, is one of the epicenter places on this planet of climate change. We've had four straight years of the worst fire seasons we've ever had. We've had smoke to deal with that's been unprecedented. Plus, we have what's happening in our ocean. The abalone fishery is decimated. There's acidification. There's all sorts of degradation going on in our ocean that isn't getting as much press. There are certainly implications for ranching in terms of the biodiversity that is able to exist in the park. It definitely degrades it. And at a time when we're facing such severe challenges globally and locally, it's even more important to have a place we can go that will give us some sense of a world that is quickly passing us by. And there's no question, and I know you're speaking to Laura Cunningham, who's an expert on this issue. She can tell you more about the impacts that ranching has on biodiversity and on exacerbating climate change.
Mark Bartolini, I want to thank you so much. You're the former executive director of the Point Reyes National Seashore Association, among the many other things that you've done on climate issues, humanitarian aid, and so forth. Mark Bartolini, thanks so much for your work, and thank you for joining us on the Project Censored Show today.
Thanks, Mickey. I enjoyed it.
Up next, we'll continue our conversation on the Project Censored Show. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. On today's program, we are looking at specifically Point Reyes National Seashore, but we're also talking about the use of national parks. In the last segment with Mark Bartolini, we also talked about social justice and equity issues around parks, health issues around parks, and of course, political economy and history. And we're joined right now by Laura Cunningham, Western Watersheds California Director. You can learn more at westernwatersheds.org. Laura Cunningham grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, attended UC Berkeley, where she studied zoology, paleontology, botany, and resource management, has traveled extensively around California on wildlife biology jobs, working for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Geological Survey, Bureau of Land Management, and of course worked for universities surveying and studying various species. Laura Cunningham is also an artist naturalist who wrote and illustrated the ecological history book, A State of Change, Forgotten Landscapes of California, that was Heyday Books from about a decade ago, which emphasized native California grasslands, oak woodlands, shrublands, and forests once filled with salmon, antelope, elk, wolves, and grizzlies thriving for thousands of years before European contact. And Laura has a particular interest in native grasses. She is working to conserve the natural desert ecosystems of California and Nevada. Laura Cunningham co-founded the small group Basin and Range Watch in 2008 and remains on the board. Presently lives in the Death Valley National Park region, likes hiking, exploring wildlands. That's certainly no surprise given the work that Laura Cunningham does. Another website we'll be talking about in our segment is the Point Reyes Rewilding Network, pointreyesrewild.org. Laura Cunningham, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us about these issues on the Project Censored Show.
Pleasure to be here. Point Reyes National Seashore is such a special and unique national park unit, and every several years or decade, the management plan that guides how the park manages all the elk and natural resources and water and the beaches gets revised. And we're actually in a process right now where part of the general management plan, as they call it, is going to be amended specifically concerning how the ranches and dairies are being managed. And so they're through the National Environmental Policy Act, there has been an environmental impact statement process ongoing, which I have been commenting on heavily and many other people. And a question I get from a lot of folks is, can we still comment? And unfortunately, the process is where the draft EIS, as they call it, has concluded, and the comment period for public comments is closed. And we're all waiting for a final EIS, which is supposed to actually respond to all of our comments on how we want the park managed, and do we want Tule Elk shot, or do we want cows, things like that. So
EIS, that's Environmental Impact Statement?
Yes.
And so you're waiting for this right now. So do you have any sense of what the comments have been in terms of where does there seem to be a majority? We talked about conflicts around park use in the earlier segment.
The local Marin Group Resource Renewal Institute organized a volunteer effort to count all the public comments, which were released in sort of a report by the Park Service. There are thousands of comments from all over the country because this is a national park. You know, these are public lands. So the count actually concluded, our volunteer network, that the majority, the vast majority, over 90% of comments favored no cattle in the national seashore. And they mostly wanted Tule Elk to be restored, natural vistas and plant communities to be restored. And people really indicated that they didn't come to the seashore to see cows, because of course you can see cows everywhere across California in private land.
And so this is something then that the Park Service is going to be left to decide?
Yeah. Several decades ago, Clem Miller, the congressman who really pushed to get the seashore from private land, there was a coalition of people in the 1960s that decided, well, we don't want urbanization to creep over these farmlands and ranchlands, so we're going to buy them out and create Point Reyes National Seashore. That's exactly what they did. I mean, they raised huge amounts of money. The U.S. Treasury bought several of the ranches. Back then, it was $55 million. That's like $300 million in today's dollars. So ranchers and dairies agreed to this. Each ranch got something like $10 to $12 million. They were given a generous life lease where they had 25 years to move, or death of a spouse. I mean, it's quite generous terms. Then, as time went on, they didn't move. They're all still there. They took the taxpayer money, but they're still farming and ranching. And some complicated gray areas have arisen where we discovered that there have been some amendments added in like 1970s. I think the ranching community had lobbied heavily. So a couple of sneaky amendments were added in the 70s, making that original life lease a bit of a gray area, where it says, at the discretion of the Secretary of Interior or the Park Service, they can continue to renew these ranch leases indefinitely. But they have to agree on certain conditions. They have to not impair and degrade the natural resources of the seashore. And so that's what a lot of us are commenting on right now is, yes, maybe they're allowed to stay, have their lease renewed every 5 years, but that's contingent on them taking care of the park and not overgrazing it and polluting the water and destroying coastal prairies. And what's called the preferred alternative in this environmental impact statement by the Park Service is to shoot native Tule elk if they get onto the pastures and compete with the cows for grass. So that caused a major uproar among the park-loving public that this is just not acceptable anymore, and it might be time for the ranchers to go.
Well, it seems in terms of the initial agreements that would be not even a controversial statement, but we're seeing a rehash of a really old conflict in a lot of ways, particularly since the park system was created over 100 years ago.
That's actually a really good point in several ways. I mean, it just reminds me that, as I mentioned, the original intent of Congress to form the seashore was to save it from urbanization. And now that's actually no longer a threat. The threat is actually the cows themselves. We're not going to allow condos to be built on the seashore, these beautiful coastal areas. It's actually the dairies and the beef cattle that are degrading the seashore. And I've talked with some Native American elders in the area, Miwok and Ohlone, and they are quite mindful of the prior history of how the ranching and dairies are said to be historic heritage of Marin County, but they're actually displaced tribal groups who depended on coastal prairies and Tule elk herds. So one of the other intents to create Point Reyes National Seashore, and it's in the enabling legislation, to restore a portion of the coast of California for the enjoyment of the public, yes, but also, to me, I interpret this as like a little bit of what Central California coast was like maybe 1,000 years ago, with native bunch grasses, herds of wild animals that you can go see, something that respects that heritage of the Native American culture that was displaced long before the dairies grabbed it and claimed it.
You know, Laura Cunningham, we certainly don't have a burgeoning movement like this in the United States per se, but in some countries, Central and South American countries, governments have voted to give rights to nature and give constitutional protections to nature. And it does sound to me that that might be one of your tenets or one of the arguments you're putting forward, is that part of this parkland should be left alone or actively restored to its more previous natural states.
That's completely my wish, to see how the seashore is managed. But I think also it was the original intent of the people who got money together and pushed Congress, and how Clem Miller, that was actually his intent too, to restore and rewild just a small portion of the Central Coast. Everything else can be ranching on private land, but this national park unit, the pastoral zone, as they call it, is a mere 28,000 acres. And that's compared to, I've tried to count how many acres are in ranching and dairying in Marin and Sonoma counties, and it's well over 100,000 acres. I mean, it's probably double that. So we're just asking for 28,000 acres to be conserved and restored, and maybe even have the local tribes help co-manage it. You know, Death Valley National Park, where I'm living next to right now, the Timbishaw Shoshone tribe pushed long and hard for co-management, legal co-management rights, to be able to go harvest mesquite beans, trim the mesquite trees so that the mesquite beans would grow, harvest pinyon nuts. It was actually a long and hard battle. They were not allowed to do this on their own homeland until, I think it was Harry Reid actually signed legislation that allowed them to co-manage their own homeland with the National Park Service. So there's some interesting models. I mean, we're just beginning to take a look at Point Reyes National Seashore in a different light, I think, than just more ranches and dairies.
Well, Laura Cunningham, we want to get into that conflict again. Well, we talked about it earlier in the show, but certainly want to hear more of your take on that. But the other thing that we want to hear from you on is one of the roles of the National Park Service is to protect the environment. Can you talk to us about what's going on in that regard? And you alluded to environmental degradation.
My work is all over public lands across California. So I look at lands managed by Bureau of Land Management, the U.S. Forest Service, and also state parks and other regional parks. And I have to say, looking at how cattle and livestock are managed on all these different lands, Point Reyes National Seashore is some of the worst managed rangeland I have ever seen. And it's surprising because the National Park Service supposedly is held to a much higher standard than just the Forest Service or BLM. You know, BLM, the joke is Bureau of Livestock and Mining. They have a reputation for that. But the Park Service is supposed to hold a higher standard to preserving native plant communities. But a lot of us fighting against ranching at the seashore think the park is actually coddling the ranchers, and the ranchers seem to be calling the shots. You go out there and there's huge erosional gullies. There's bare ground where there should be native bunch grasses and wildflowers. I mean, at the end of the summer, some of the dairies are just grazed to a crisp, and there's just dust. So when the first Pacific winter storms hit that, what happens is the rain washes a lot of bare dirt and manure, there's a lot of cattle manure there, into the streams and then into the ocean. So Kehoe Creek, for example, is in a dairy, and it's appalling. You go out there and, you know, you can look with binoculars and you see the dairy operations, even though they're organic, these are organic dairies, and it's made me really rethink my diet recently about drinking milk. You go out there and there are huge tanker trucks full of liquefied manure, and they even store liquefied manure that they wash from the dairy milking barns into these ponds, basically brown ponds of muck and ooze, and they take these up into water tank trucks, and you'll watch them, and they actually spray the liquefied manure on fields. This is on national parkland, and so this is supposedly a form of how to deal with all this excess manure from the dairies. But the rains will wash a lot of that manure into the streams. And so Kehoe Creek at times just spikes in fecal coliform bacteria, you know, E. coli, what you can get sick from, levels that are way above EPA human safety standards. And at times the National Park Service has had to close the beaches like Abbott's Lagoon and even some of the beaches around these dairies because of human health hazards from excess manure. I mean, the more you learn, the more you're horrified, especially during times that we're very much thinking about what are called zoonotic diseases, you know, diseases that jump from animals to humans.
Well, that's certainly been in the news these days. I just want to remind listeners, you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. We're speaking with Laura Cunningham. She's a scientist, artist, ecologist, and the California director for Western Watersheds Project. You can learn more at westernwatersheds.org. We'll continue our conversation after this brief musical break. Stay with us.
They paved paradise and put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you got till it's gone? They paved paradise and put up a parking lot.
Welcome back to the Project Censored Show on Pacifica Radio. I'm your host, Mickey Huff. In this segment of the program, we are joined by Laura Cunningham. She is a scientist, artist, ecologist, and the California director for the Western Watersheds Project. Also, Laura Cunningham is author of State of Change, Forgotten Landscapes of California, a gold medal winner of the 2011 California Book Award about Native California ecosystems that are disappearing as a result of agricultural conversion and development. You can also learn more about Laura Cunningham's work at pointraiserewild.org. Laura Cunningham, before the break, you were telling us some disturbing things about California ecosystems, in particular Point Reyes in western Marin County, that are disappearing as a result of agricultural conversion and development, specifically through ranching. So I asked our previous guest, Mark Bartolini, about this issue, and I also wanted to play a little bit of devil's advocate, although you've certainly made a powerful case for some of the problems that people maybe want to turn a blind eye to. What are the arguments of people that are remaining there that are trying to lobby and influence the Park Service in terms of their economic interest?
They'll say we're organic, we're grass-fed beef, we're trying to do carbon farming, which I don't think the park is officially saying they're doing that, but they're trying to say, like, the Strauss dairy. And I used to be a fan of Strauss milk, and I thought it was higher than average quality. But Strauss, he has these manure methane digesters on the park land, which is supposed to reduce some of the manure and turn it into a form of energy. You might think that's good, but again, it's the result of cramming almost factory farm levels of dairy cattle into a small amount of land, and then they're overgrazing this meager range, which is basically weeds from Europe now, not even native bunch grasses. And so you have to supplement these dairy cows, because think of a lactating female. They require a lot of calories. So there are trucked in loads of alfalfa hay from the Central Valley. There's some carbon emissions not accounted for. They grow what's called silage on park land, which is a mixture of mustard, radish, and grains like rye and barley, to feed these dairy cows. So there's just this mountains, literally, of manure being produced. So when Strauss says he's taking a little bit of that for energy, that's a drop in the bucket. And you're not solving all the impairment of water, the destruction of coastal prairies. And Strauss himself has said in op-eds in the media, yeah, we might need to get rid of some tule elk. So that's some arguments they use, but then they'll use the arguments, oh, we're just small family farmers trying to survive in Marin. We've done some investigating, and some of the ranches that might apply to, although they were given like $10 to $12 million in the 60s, so I don't know how poor that would make them, because I don't know what even happened to that money. What did they do with it? They were supposed to take it and buy private land. But we've discovered that a lot of these ranchers are interrelated in just a few families, and they're actually pretty wealthy. A lot of them have land in mainland Marin, private land. Strauss himself, his main Strauss ranching dairy land is not in the seashore. He buys a lot of milk from the dairies on the seashore, but it's a myth that if we restored the seashore to wild tule elk and coastal prairie, that all of Marin County would take this gigantic economic hit. That's what they say. That's one of the ranchers' arguments. But I'm sure Mark got into the whole economics of milk, too. We're in kind of a milk glut at times, especially during the pandemic when people are dumping milk.
No, actually, Mark didn't get into that. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I find articles every couple of months that I save that say, well, there's too much milk. And at times in Marin County, there are articles saying, well, you have a milk glut. There's too much milk being produced. And the prices are going down so much that dairies are actually having a hard time making a living because there's just too much milk. And, you know, there's plenty of milk around to go have cheese. The famous cheese trail of Marin and Sonoma County does not even go into the seashore. So we have plenty of milk and cheese to go around. And I think that's one of the reasons that the ranchers have pushed this preferred alternative that the park is embracing of ranch diversification on the seashore. Because I think they know that it's economically just marginal doing dairies and beef ranching. And so they want to diversify and have pigs and goats and chickens, and they want to grow crops and sell them. Maybe they'll even have medical marijuana dispensaries. Who knows? They want to have ranch Airbnbs on the parklands. This is in the environmental impact statement. You can read it. Just go on the park website, Google Point Reyes National Seashore EIS, and you'll get the page that you can read what they are proposing. We're waiting with bated breath to see the final EIS, and that will choose this alternative. You know, one of the alternatives was maybe only have beef cows and not dairies, because the dairies just produce so much water pollution. Another alternative that we preferred was no ranching, restore the pastoral zone back to nature and recreation with hiking trails, biking trails. Most comments wanted that. So we're waiting to see that the park actually might pick the ranching full-on alternative, you know, just a diversifying economy to help the ranchers. But it's not helping the public to enjoy the seashore, and it's certainly not helping native species.
So Laura Cunningham, then who exactly is making this decision or determination, and when do you expect it?
The regional director of the National Park Service, whose office is in San Francisco, oversees the seashore, and that person will be making the decision and signing what's called a record of decision. That's the final agency decision. And I mean, after that, they can just go start shooting tule elk and expanding the ranches. We were told by the Park Service that this final EIS will come out in summer. And so it could be any day, could be next week, could be a couple of weeks, but they've already delayed it a couple of times. And then there'll be a 30-day pause between that and the signing of the record of decision by the Park Service regional director. And then that's it. Ranches can diversify and bring truckloads of hogs in, have hog farms on your parkland.
Laura Cunningham, Mark Bartolini brought up Jared Huffman, Dianne Feinstein, Congressman Huffman in the region, of course, Senator Feinstein. Where have they stood on this, particularly Jared Huffman?
Despite the fact that 90% of the comments or more wanted no ranching and restore Tule Elk, Huffman has been strangely deaf to his constituents, and a lot of them have been writing and calling, and I mean, at one point even holding signs up next to his office, and he's been particularly concerned only with the ranchers. I mean, he's just been like only siding with them and not listening to any other group, not even mountain biking associations, wildlife photographer associations. He has threatened at times, and actually did last year introduce legislation in kind of a sneaky way to say, well, we're going to just clarify and make ranching a permanent part of how Point Reyes Seashore is managed. And that caused a ruckus, and we all contacted Congress and, you know, the Natural Resources Committee that he had to get that through, and it got pulled. So fortunately that didn't happen, but he's kind of indicated he might try to do that again if groups get wanting to fight any decision that would expand ranching. So that's a constant thing that we're keeping watch of. And we're also trying to educate Huffman and write him and say, look, the economy of Marin does not just depend on livestock and agriculture. There's tourism. I mean, there's so many other things that this unique seashore can provide to the local economy. Plus, listen to your constituents sometime too.
That's certainly an important element. Perhaps he'll tune into this program. Laura Cunningham, that brings me to the final question. We've certainly been Northern California-centric on today's program with you and Mark Bartolini. But why is this an issue nationally? Why should people listening to this show across the country be looking in their own backyards for what's happening with parks and public lands?
Just think of Yellowstone National Park, Yosemite National Park, I mean, Shenandoah back east. These are globally important places to conserve the last of our wild areas and for people to just enjoy and see some areas that are historically valued, culturally important, and naturally full of splendor. A lot of the parks have issues. Yellowstone National Park, for instance, when the bison, the native buffalo, exit Yellowstone, they get shot by cattle ranchers because they are claimed to have a disease, brucellosis, which is actually from the cattle. So everyone in the United States who enjoys their national parks and monuments, Point Reyes National Seashore is actually a nationally, internationally beloved place. It's very unique. It could be the Serengeti or the Yellowstone of California for the amount of wildlife that are there. I mean, you can go whale watching, bird watching. I've seen more bobcats there than anywhere else, native tule elk, elephant seals. It's just a magnificent place to go wildlife viewing. And international tourists, national tourists flock there. So it's not just a local issue, but it's an issue that highlights the threats to a lot of our national parks across the country. We've got to be vigilant as citizens and park lovers and taxpayers and voters to protect these places.
Well, Laura Cunningham is someone that I grew up in Pennsylvania, but I've been in California for 20 years. I actually can attest to everything that you just said. I live less than an hour from the Point Reyes Seashore. I'm in Sonoma County here, and I can certainly attest to the beauty of that land and also the conflicts that come up. Living here, you know, I certainly see even in our own neighborhoods, you know, people that have a history, you know, of ranching and so forth in that area. And it gets pretty contentious and myopic in that regard. You, Laura Cunningham, have just given us a lot more to think about, a lot more information to contextualize these conflicts. Websites for you include the Western westernwatersheds.org. It's westernwatersheds.org, and you are the California director for the Western Watersheds Project. Also, your book, State of Change, Forgotten Landscape of California, is a gold medal winner, 2011 California Book Award, about the native California ecosystems that are disappearing as a result of agricultural conversion and development. Laura Cunningham, thank you so much for joining us on today's Project Centered Show.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for this opportunity.
Supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians, because they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by myself along with Peter Phillips. I'm the executive producer, Mickey Huff, of this program, also the host. Our co-host is Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest, our senior producer. Our associate producer is Dennis Murphy. Thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
About criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide, wars, far for little poison. The weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons, build the capacity, citizens. And the ties for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential fame. At the table, then you're probably on the menu.
We got that love of the brothers.